Thou art saved.
The living room's dark, save for light being cast from the big TV screen and the imminent sunrise that's teasing the one starry sky with whispers of morning.
George is you and has greeting.
George does have greeting. George is not Baba.
So I got to be honest with you. When I was writing this opening line, because I put more time into this line than I think I normally have to put into an opening line of an episode. But when I was writing that, all I could think of is the episode of The Simpsons where
Bart
presses the... No, it's the Smokey the Bear. And he presses the button and it goes... Only who can prevent forest fires? And there's a button that says you and a button that says me. And he presses you and he goes, you have pressed you, meaning me. The correct answer is you. And he kicks it. And because I was like, technically, George's you would mean I'm you. Right. I'm George, right? So like it doesn't totally work out, but I thought it was okay. And yeah, plus I got this side story out of it.
Exactly. No, it was a huge plus. The only other thing that you could do is, you know, if you had all the letters in a row, you could nudge up like you is subscribe and like the channel, you know, and leave comments, right? You is leave and comments, you know. Subscribers has comments, which means that if we push the subscribers into a defeat, it would just explode and there'd be comments.
Yes. What did you think I meant?
I don't know. I mean, from everything that we've done with encouraging them to go outside of their house and start screaming, I think exploding into positive comments about the show, I think is that's on brand.
It is on brand. So we played Baba Is You, which... I don't want to say we played Quirk just to set this episode up, but the fact that the fact that we played Quirk first, like, I'm thankful for, right? Mm-hmm. Although, again, this is not a direct sequel to that episode, but you should go listen to that episode and then come listen to this episode. And if you already listened to that episode, do it again anyway. The one thing that I was genuinely shocked about with this game is how recently it came out. This game came out in March of last year.
Like, yes.
I knew it was a nostalgia game. I didn't realize it was like that new, because usually there's like a couple of years between us and when we get around to a game being on nostalgia goggles. So I was like, oh, this one's like fresh out the oven.
So the reason I did know that it came out last year, because the way I became aware of this game was I watch a YouTube channel, Game Maker's Toolkit, which has... all kinds of, you know, good information on there. And if you're not subscribed, if you have any interest in game design, definitely check it out. I will fully admit to the fact that some of the more salient observations I've had on this show have been not cribbed directly, but, you know, I have learned things from that show that I have applied.
Great artist steal, George.
Yeah, exactly. We all stand upon the shoulders of giants, and it's entropy all the way down. All is true, but no. So basically, on his channel, he did a top games of 2019, and he's like, my number one game is Baba Is You, and I was like, you know, so I'm like doing chores. I'm just kind of listening to this in the background, you know. And so he said it's a Sakaban type game from, you know, like this, that. And I'm like, all right, you know, that's fine. And I was like, I know what a Sakaban type is. Now, you know, but just looking at the video, I could say like, oh, I know what he's talking about. You know, he said the main difference is, and then he put the main premise of the game in there, and I just immediately paused it and dismissed the video because I'm like, no, I want to play this game, you know. And so that's when I was like, hey, I want to play this game, but I haven't played enough of the genre to really, you know, do a comparison. So then that's when I started kind of prodding us to be like, we should. And I, to be fair, I recommended that we play Sakaban, and you're like, yeah, that's a little, let's play Quirk. And I was, all right, let's do that.
It's a little out there for an American audience, right?
Yes.
Like, if we were in Japan, I would be like, Yes, absolutely. And I apologize. I know we have some listeners in Japan. I'm sorry. Most of our listeners are native English speakers on the Western side of the world. But I backed into the exact same story as you from the other direction because I learned about this game from a different YouTube channel. And I was just like, oh, wow, that sounds really interesting. But they didn't go very in-depth into it. It was just like about a bunch of games. And I was like, oh, man, that sounds super interesting. And then we got the listener request for Quirk. And so we played Quirk. And then you were the one who enlightened me to the term, you know, Sakoban-like. And then I was like, oh, this is why George wants to play Bob as You, because this is part of that genre, but it's been evolved in like this really unique way. And I also subscribed to Game Maker's Toolkit. And when I saw the video that included Bob as You, I had learned about it from another place, so I avoided watching that video until after I had played the game. And then I was like, okay, now like I have my own notes. I formulated my own opinions. And this is actually a weird thing that I don't know if I've ever said this on the show, but like doing Nostalgia Goggles has impacted my YouTube experience, because if I see a video or a podcast or something about a game that I think we're going to play at some point, or that I know we're going to play, then I have to like circle back to it later, which is, I don't know. It's just weird because like YouTube doesn't seem like it should be that serious of a thing, but it's become this like faux academia where I'm like, oh, I can't read that person's paper until I've formulated my own opinions and tested my own hypotheses.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, especially because I think most of what both of us listen to, it falls under the umbrella of like edutainment.
Totally.
You know, so, you know, I mean, like, I'm always like I really love, you know, Kyrgyzstat and SciShow and, you know, and Game Maker's Toolkit and all these different ones. So, yeah, when I see a Game Maker's Toolkit that, you know, was talking about like Shovel Knight, I was like, well, and at that point we had already played it. So I was like, okay, cool. I'm interested to see, you know, what this person thought of it, you know. But yeah, there's definitely some of them where I'm like, ooh, this is, I mean, like I said, literally I was listening to it and I'm like, nope, I think I want to play this. Stop. You know, let me not go into it with a ton of information or tainted. So before we, you know, go to the top of the hour, the one thing though that for any of our players, any of our listeners who have not played this game, the main kind of twist on this is, so this is a Sakoban-like, which is to say that, you know, it's about moving puzzle pieces around a board to try to get to a goal, you know? So you're moving blocks, moving whatever, right? The main difference, though, is that there are blocks of words, and moving those blocks into statements changes the reality of the universe in which you inhabit. So if the statement is, Baba is you, then you are the little white rabbit Baba. But if you move Kiki in there and it says, Kiki is you, then you become the little red Kiki. If you move it to wall is you or rock is you, you become those things. And so the goal isn't to move things around. The goal is to change the laws that you're beholden to in order to solve the puzzle, which is really fascinating to me as a concept. So that's why I really wanted to play it.
Yeah, you play as a Q intern. Like, you don't have all the powers of a Q. You can't just do anything. But like you'll grow up and have all the powers of a Q one day, so you have to be able to change some fundamental laws of reality, just not all of them.
I really do imagine that this would be a game similar. This is the Duplos, Q Duplos, you know? Where like they would sit a baby Q down in front of this and say, like, okay, play this for a little while. It's like, you see what happens when you change the gravitational constant of the universe, you know? And then just builds from there.
So I do want to mention, you know, we've got a couple, we have a long running game that's going right now. And I've also been streaming, the next game, that we're going to record, the next time we record. So thank you to people who've been following on Twitch and leaving reviews on the podcasts and all those things. I think this game is a funny example to have me mention people subscribing on Twitch, because I had a very human moment where I decided I am not willing to stream this. I'm not willing to stare at a screen for 20 minutes making zero progress while people watch. Like, I'm just not up for that kind of pressure.
If it makes you feel any better, it is exactly as disheartening as you think it is, because Teddy saw me play this a couple of times, my 4-year-old son, and for whatever reason, he decided that he loved this game, and he would call it the spooky one, because he doesn't know anything about it, and it's kind of spooky, you know, like it's got like a black backdrop, and you know, so
he'd be like, little white ghost looking character.
Yeah, you go like, Dada, are you gonna play the spooky one? And I'm like, sure. So I'd sit down and have my 4-year-old, with the exact attention of a 4-year-old, sitting there next to me, becoming clearly agitated with me just staring at the screen. He's like, no, Dada, here. And he would take the controller away from me sometimes. He couldn't solve the puzzle, but like, I don't know, man. Like, I think that you made the right call of not having an audience for this game, because then he'd get frustrated and be like, oh, no, you shouldn't do this level. You should do the other one. I'm like, okay. All right, let me just try to get my head wrapped around this one. No, wait, don't do this one, Dada. Do this other one. I'm like, oh, God, this is my hell.
Yeah, so good. I'm glad we both kind of backed into the same conclusion from different directions. But so do we jump right into visuals?
Visuals for the sake of visuals off the top. The visuals here are very childlike, you know, which I think is kind of interesting, you know? It definitely looks like a child's drawing, you know, like Baba is what looks like a 6-year-old or a 5-year-old would draw a rabbit, you know. The walls are you know, definitely walls, and like the rocks look like rocks, but like the skulls look like childlike drawn skulls. Love, the hearts are just, you know, little crudely drawn hearts, you know. So it has a very childlike aesthetic, you know, and even the language that's used, like Baba is you, you know, rock is stop, you know, things like that, is very, very childlike, which I thought was very interesting considering how deep and complex the problem solving is, like how much of the universe you have to be aware of in order to solve the problem. Like, I thought that it was very, very, a very interesting juxtaposition between those two things. And I wasn't sure what to do with that information. I have some theories, but I wanted to know what your thoughts were.
Yeah, I mean, I literally have like a child's drawing, but in a good way, in my notes. So I'm on the same page as you. I don't know if I felt like it was a bad thing, mostly because the nature of what you're trying to do is so complex that communicating it with the simplest possible words and the simplest possible visuals is probably necessary to not cause other distractions. Like, if everything was too detailed, maybe is the right word. Like, if everything looked too sophisticated, certainly the verbiage, right? If the text blocks were more complicated words, or, you know, larger multi-syllable words where a simpler single syllable word might suffice, then sorry, I just did it, right? I could have said would do instead. I said suffice, right? Like that would lead you to start to pick apart nuance that may not actually exist, right? Mm-hmm. You'd be looking for nuance that isn't there just because it's like, oh, well, one interpretation of that word, or maybe because this wall is angled this way, I can, it, like in every 3D platformer where you're like, is this slope flat enough that I can climb up it? It looks like maybe it is, right? There's none of that ambiguity, which is, it forces you to focus on the nature of the world and not the appearance of the world, right? Everything is very clear down to, what you would call them other than like the ends of sentences. So like the word you, right, in Baba is you is it's a negative, right? So every word is in a block, and the word you is in a block where the word part is the negative space, and then the block part is the colored space instead of the word you being in colored letters. And that actually tells you that there are parts of the sentence that can't go in. You cannot write a sentence that is you is Baba, right?
Right.
You can have Baba is you. You can have Baba is you and something, but you can't start a sentence, right? Stop can't start a sentence. Open can't start a sentence. And they don't give you that information in any way other than when a sentence is on, like when that rule is in effect, it's illuminated. And if you put a block style word at the beginning of a sentence, that sentence will never illuminate. And they don't ever tell you that. They never give you that information, but you try the first time you try it, you now know from that point on, oh, stop and open and push and all these other words that are in blocks cannot go at the beginning of sentences. They can go at the end and they can go in the middle. And so if the block had like, oh, it's a metallic sheen, that means it can't go at the beginning of a sentence. This one kind of has like a wet sheen, but it might be metallic. You know what I mean? Like simple prevents all of that.
Yes, I agree completely. I think that they were leveraging the simple art style in multiple ways. Here's my kind of aesthetic feel for it, because I agree with you completely, is that, you know, if they had really complicated or complex visuals, I mean, I can't even imagine somebody trying to do this in actual three dimensions instead of top-down two dimensions. Like, that'd be just, it'd be untenable, which is a word that you would never see in Baba Is You. You see just tenable, and there's an un. And so you can push un in front of tenable to make it untenable. Anyways, no, is that what I think that they're kind of trying to do with the artwork is to basically constantly drive to you, like, think like a child, you know, because like, and this is one of the things I just find so fascinating and to me deeply meaningful about this game. And at some point I'm going to gush about the philosophy behind this and I don't know when that's going to come out. So just everybody brace up. But it's to say, like, you know, like, remember when you were a kid and it's like, okay, well, now I'm going to be the jet airplane, you know? Oh, okay, well, you know, like, well, don't, the floor is lava, you know, don't touch the floor is lava. And it's like, and then the kid just jumps down and you're like, well, how come you're able to touch it? It's like, oh, well, I'm floating, you know? And it's like, okay, so now you can just walk across the floor, which is apparently lava, which I'm drowning in, you know? Just like, think like a child, you know? Don't, like, just, if it's not working, change it. You know, rock is you. You know, like, so it's like, you know, if it's like rock is stop. And it's like, well, I gotta get past this. It's like, then make the rock not stop you. You know, like, just change the gravitational constant of the universe, right? You know, so to me, it's that art style, not only does it help with everything you said about, you know, making it very simple, not adding complexity. It's in this sense, it's kind of like, with Portal 1, where, you know, the visuals are very clear where you can and can't portal, because they are asking you to think in such a novel space, you know, to where people literally say, well, that's thinking with portals, meaning that a game literally taught you how to think about space differently, you know? Like, that's no small feat, right? So, like, in the similar ways that they were kind of like, you know what, we can't have wild, insane, complex visuals or anything like that. It wouldn't work, you know? So we're going to keep it really simple.
Well, Nate, I feel like they even did that with the animations themselves, right? Not just the static assets, but when they're in motion, because first off, everything's technically in motion all the time because it does the Dr. Katz style wiggly like home movies used to do before they decided to smooth it out, which is weird. But that, like, the edge of everything just looks like it's filled with carpenter ants and it's just kind of wiggling. And that's it. The only reason I think it's odd is because I found, and the people that I talked to that played this game, you spend a lot of time not moving, right? And so that means that you are often staring at a static screen trying to think like, okay, well, what if I made this sentence into that? What if I combine these two sentences, whatever? And so the screen is always kind of dancing, right? But then I noticed that that wiggly outline is like pretty subtle, right? It's not distracting, but there are certain little touches that are bigger motions to communicate information you need, because the wiggly outline is just an artistic choice, which is neither here nor there. But things like is hot, if you are melt and it is hot, actually I should say if you is melt and it is hot, then when you touch it, you die, right? If it is defeat, when you touch it, you die. So like, you need to know that kind of information. And the way they often communicate that is with these like really gentle touches. So if something is float, it has this like really kind of lilting up and down floating animation, just enough that you can tell the difference between what is floating and what's not floating. If something
is float and what is not float.
Right. So like if something is hot, it gives off like just a little bit of steam periodically in these like little bursts. There's also lots of things that can move that are not necessarily you, because there's the is move block where things move on their own. But when those things move, they do not leave a dust trail. The only things that leave dust trails when they walk is if you, the player, are controlling them. So it's like you can tell when something's moving, like, did I make that move or is that moving because of a rule? Because if it doesn't leave the little dust trail, then it's not you. Only, you know, you is dust trail. So there's all these little touches, like the little cogs in some of the levels, because they're like factory themed, I guess. The cogs only rotate when there's movement happening. It's like it doesn't change anything, doesn't mean anything, but it's just this neat little touch to let you know like you took an action. Those cogs spun because you moved.
Yes, I mean the same thing with like belt, like, you know, belt is push or
is shift. Yeah.
Shift.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The belt isn't just that the animation of the arrows is only moving when the world is moving, and the world only moves when you move, right? So it's like it's you're not controlling time, but in a way you kind of are.
Yes. Well, and one of the things, and this is kind of a gameplay thing, but there is a visual component to it, is that when there is something that is movement sensitive, which is to say that it moves when you move, you don't have to move. You can just push A, and it puts at the top, like push A to move. Mm-hmm. So that way you are just advancing time forward a tick. So you don't have to like jump back and forth and like try to get, you know, it's just like, no, I just need to, I need time to advance one frame, which I thought was pretty nice. One of the things that they did that I thought was critical with the visuals was that they make it, as a general rule, very clear what rules you cannot change.
Mm-hmm.
Simply by where they're located within the stage. You know, so like if wall is stop and that's not, they're like, don't worry about that. Like wall is going to be stopped. It is normally behind a wall where it is just, that is the, all that is there. It is a 1 block by 3 block area. And all it says is wall is stop, you know? So you just know. So like typically you can see, normally it's like in the top left corner or it's kind of in all of the corners, but you can quickly scan the level and be like, okay, what rules of the universe can I not mitigate at all? Like, am I just going to have to deal with? Okay, these are the ones I can deal with. What are the rules in my immediate surroundings that are probably the ones that they're going to want me to play with initially, you know? And so, you know, so they do a good job visually kind of spreading out like what words you have to play with. So it gets your mind thinking in the right area of, okay, you know, I've got, you know, wall is stop, Baba is you. Those are two locked behind walls. So they're not expecting me to dink around with who I am or being able to move through walls. That's not changing. Okay, so I've got rock is stop and rock is, you know, rock is stop. And I have also push and telly, you know, so it's like, okay, so probably something with a rock and teleporting somewhere, you know, like, so, and then you start playing around with it, you know, but I thought that they did a good job visually laying out where the words were to lead you down an appropriate path.
So I actually had the same note under mechanics, but I'm glad that you mentioned this in visuals, because what I didn't think of when I put this in mechanics is everything you said is true, and there's two different ways they communicate that information that are actually subtly different. So when they do, you know, wall is stop and it's completely surrounded by a wall, that tells you right away, you cannot change this rule, right? Because you can't even get to where the rule is. But something else that they will do, because this is a Sokoban-like, which means you can't pull things, you can only push things, until later, but we'll get to that.
Until you can pull things.
Right up until you can. But one of the other things they do is they will start with rules up against the wall or up against the extreme edges of the screen sometimes, but you can still get to them, which means you can add on to them. So you can do, if it says like wall is stop, you might be able to make it wall is stop and open. So you can't negate the stop, but you could make it and open, or you could make it and push or whatever, right? Or you can do, there's a bunch of puzzles you solve by like, I can't move this thing, but I can turn it into something I can move. So like one of them is like, you know, grass is Kiki is defeat, right? And then it's like, oh, then I'll just pile all the Kikis in the corner and then walk past, you know, in the now open space, right? So there's, this is really important from communicating the mechanics, because if you go into a level where something is completely walled off, all you have to do is memorize that rule and then stop worrying about it because you can't change it. If it's against the wall or against the edge of the screen, then you might need to manipulate it, but you can't negate it, right? And so there's that subtle difference in, is this thing against the edge where I can reach it, or is this thing actually completely unreachable? Gives you some information. Either don't worry about this at all, worry about this a little, or it's out where you can manipulate it. You absolutely need to worry about this, right? And right, just literally the placement on the screen gives you all of that information. And that's, it's again, the simplicity, right? It's important. Do I need to know about this and file it away, or do I need to know about this and use that information to solve the puzzle?
Well, and that's the thing, is that, you know, like, they were very, and I can't not liken this to Portal because of the novel space it makes you think in, but is that, you know, they were like basically saying, look, we are going to I'm gonna go into the philosophy of it now. So here's the thing, is that, and I'm gonna butcher this a little bit, so please bear with me, but there's four main stages of cognitive development, right? There's you know, the first one where it's basically, and I always get the first two screwed up a little bit, but it's basically like the universe exists, right? Like, you get this when you're a baby, right? You know, so it's like, you know, the universe exists. Oh my God, that's amazing, right? And then all of a sudden you realize that you're not the universe, right? You are different, you know, like that you, and you can kind of control things that happen to you, you know? So like the first thing you get when you're like an infant, you know, second one you get when you're like two or something like that, very, very young, you know? And then when you're a teenager, you hit stage three development, which is I can change, you know? So, which is why you tend to see a lot of experimentation with identity around that time, you know? Is it's like, oh, I'm not static. I can be anything, anyone. I can do whatever I want, you know? And then interestingly, some people stop developing. Like, not everybody reaches stage four of cognitive development. Which is to say that, and you cannot reach stage four until you're actually in your mid-20s. So it happens way later in life, but it means that there are 25-year-olds that are more cognitively developed than 60-year-olds, just because some people hit it. You can hit it at any point past that point, but it just doesn't happen for some people, which is the universe can change, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, because, I mean, think about how many people do you know where it's just kind of like, well, that's just the way the world works. It's like, it doesn't have to. The universe can change, you know?
Is it, and this, so, this feels really reminiscent of like internal, external locus of control.
Very much so. Yeah. Yes. You know, it's kind of tangential, but I mean, it you know, as with a lot of, you know, human philosophy and psychology, it kind of all kind of bleeds together. But I mention all that because what drew me to this game is that, so often I've said, you know, like, whenever you reach something that you don't like or that you wish wasn't so, you have two options: change yourself or change the universe, right? If you're walking down the road and there's a giant boulder in your path, you can change yourself, walk around the boulder, or change the universe, move the boulder. Those are your options, right? And whenever I say to people like, oh, we'll just change the universe, they're like, oh yeah, that's all I have to do. I'm like, well, you don't have to change the whole thing. You just have to change the part of it you don't like, you know? Like,
well, not, but do all something of it, about it. Not today. Yeah. I mean, it's already after lunch.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you don't have to change the gravitational constant of the universe. You just have to change, you know, you just have to polarize the deflector dish to, you know, like, you know, or whatever Jordy did. So I said all that to say this, is that this game is one of the first ones that I've really seen that just takes that concept and just runs with it. You know, it basically says, you know, like, what if we made that a core concept, to where, like, we made a video game to where the entire game is about changing the rules that govern the universe, right? Where it's not only a feature, it is the core feature and a requirement, you know, like, and I find that amazing and fascinating. And they knew that this concept is foreign to many, many, many people, you know? So they knew that they were going to be teaching it, you know, even to myself, where I'd like to think that I have a pretty firm grasp about changing the universe when I don't like it. I myself, you know, can struggle with it just like anybody can, right? So because they knew all of that cognitive legwork that they were having to do, they basically said, lobotomize everything else. You know, if it is not serving that core concept, it doesn't need to be in the game. Fancy artwork? Nope, it's gone. You know, like narrative? What narrative? It's gone. You know, like all of it. Just start. You know, like you go through the seven core aesthetics, right? You can probably just like
nope,
not only
nope,
is it
nope.
Yeah, not only is it not a core aesthetic, it's not there at all. You know, like what's the narrative behind this game? It's like I don't know. I got to the ending and I still don't really know what happened. Like it's not important. Don't worry about it. Worry about this one thing.
They really did exactly. I think it was literally one dude.
Nice.
The original creator or creator and team decided exactly what you're saying, which I think is reminiscent of like the way you learn to meditate, right? Mm-hmm. Or honestly, the way you would learn most skills is you have to cut away all of the noise, right? So when you think about like, oh, you know, I want to learn to meditate. It's like, well, yeah, a Buddhist monk could probably walk through Times Square on New Year's Eve and successfully meditate because they can push all of that visual and auditory information out of their mind. But you and I, not so much, right? So we need to be in a quiet area and we need to maybe close our eyes and sit comfortably so that we're not distracted by like our, you know, our aching knees and aching backs and things. Like these are all ways you cut that stuff out. And to say we want someone to do this incredibly mentally complex task, so how's it going to look as they're moving through the universe where we're having them think in this way? And it's like simple as possible. Just nothing that would visually confuse or add nuance where nuance does not belong or distract, right? There's just none of that. None of that at all. And in fact, you know, mentioning again the wiggly outline, I literally think that that's there as an aesthetic choice, but it does have the mechanical effect of I know the game didn't freeze, right? Because otherwise I would be tempted to just like left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right to make sure like everything was still functioning. But because the world is always like kind of gently in motion, it's just a reminder that like the game is still running and you can just take all the time you need to think and everything will just kind of keep wiggling away and waiting for you, right? So the visuals, by not being there, right, by being incredibly subdued to the point of childlike almost being insulting, like, oh, these graphics are terrible, like a kid could have made these. And it's like, yeah, and that's what we needed to accomplish this goal. Anything more sophisticated would actually be a detriment.
Absolutely. The one other minor throwaway note that I had on visuals was the pause menu shows all of the rules that are in effect, which is super helpful. I didn't use it a whole lot just because I preferred to kind of scan through the level and like see what the rules were. But I definitely felt that it was good to have, because if there was ever a point where I was like, wait, why did that do that? You know, I could just pause it and then scan through and be like, ah, okay. So Baba is melt and Wall is hot. Okay. Because it's like, Wall isn't defeat. Why when I hit the wall did I suddenly like pop into nothingness? You know, and it's like, oh, because, you know, it's like, yeah, Wall's hot, but who cares? You know, it's like, oh, okay, because it says Baba is you here, but over there it does say Baba is melt. Okay. Now I've got it. You know, so having a place where you can just very quickly press the start button and double check everything that's going on in the universe was super helpful.
And yeah, and I won't go too much into the mechanical nature of the two comments I'm about to make, but the fact that rules are illuminated when they are in effect and they are dimmed when they're not in effect is tremendously helpful to also, you know, juggle all that cognitive load.
Yeah, absolutely necessary.
Totally. And the other thing, which I didn't deal with as much, in at least in the levels I got to, because I got the sense that you may have gotten quite a bit further than I did, which is not super surprising.
I don't know about that, man. I did not get as far as I would have liked to.
Well, some of the levels have what I've taken to call truisms, where it'll say like wall is wall. Mm-hmm. And if you try to make wall something else, you can't. You can't mm-hmm. undo a truism. And the way it communicates that is with a big fat red X. So, yep. So like if you try, like if wall is somewhere in the level, and then you try and make like wall is ice, then it will literally X out the wall, the is, and the ice to let you know this mm-hmm. entire rule is not happening.
And I think I may be wrong on this, but I think I ran into this in the level, which is you can undo that with a not. So
correct. Yeah.
Yes.
But you can't
wall.
Yeah, you can't just literally override a truism. You have mm-hmm. to counter a truism.
Yeah. Which is wall is wall. Wall is not wall. And then all of a sudden you can yeah. start messing with it. But that started to get to the point, and we'll get into it mechanics, where the learning curve just got so steep. And I was like, man, I don't know how much more my fragile self-esteem can take of this, you know, mental beating. So I think I'm good, but you know, anyways, we'll get into that. But are you good for audio?
I'm so ready to talk about the gentle, quiet, calm, soothing music that barely exists, much like the visuals.
Yes. Yeah. No, the music is absolutely nothing to write home about. I mean, like, I mean, in the sense that, like you said, it's very calm. It's very soothing. I could not hum a word of it to you, but it does not, it's unobtrusive. It's not drawing your attention because honestly, if anything, it just enhances your ability to fade into your own mind and run the trillions of iterations. I mean, I swear to God, I felt like most of the time I felt like Dr. Strange, you know, like
I looked into 15 billion potential yeah. futures.
And I looked into 15 billion different iterations of this game. How many did you win? Just one.
Like None of them.
None of them. There's an infinite number of parallel universes, and not a single one am I able to beat this game. And all this is true. The one thing, though, that I did feel that they did a very good job with, though, was some of the sound effects. So, this one is a music note that ties into sound effects, right? Which is, if you catastrophically screw up, the music ducks out entirely.
Yes,
you know?
And a catastrophic fail in this case would be not only death, but also rendering yourself non-functional. Like if you break yes. the sentence, Baba is you, and you are not something else, the
right.
music goes away. And it goes away almost instantly. Like it almost instantly fades to zero.
Right. And, you know, if it fades to zero, then there's normally a little replay button at the top that says, like, hey, you know, and you can literally just back it up one move, which we'll get into in mechanics. But, you know, like, you can just undo that last thing that you did. But I do think that, I don't know why, man, it, like, I definitely ran into a wall that was melt when I was hot. I ran into more skulls that were defeat than I could possibly count. Ran into a few loves that were defeat, which I found emotionally distressing. Mm-hmm. There was nothing that was more cerebrally and emotionally damaging than dissociating the you from a sentence, man. I don't know why, but all of a sudden it's like, you are nothing, you know? And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh God, I'm not, like, because to me it's like the entire universe can change. And you can, you're almost like a small demigod. You can mold it into all of these different things that you want. But in your mad genius, you forgot to firmly tether yourself to any part of it. And so you just ceased.
Yeah. Ugh. No, you can create a universe in which you don't exist.
Yes. And so I really kind of felt like, I don't know why the dropout in music really drove that home to me, where it was just kind of like, to me, it was like, the music doesn't exist anymore. Not that the music stopped existing. You stopped existing in the universe.
You know what this is? This is the cleric going into the cursed area with the vampire, right?
Is Ooh, yes, in Catterley?
Yes, because you know, he goes in and he can no longer hear the song of his god, but he doesn't realize it right away. Like, this is that. Is like,
yeah,
it's not that the music went away, you went away. The universe has music, you're not there to hear it.
Yes. Yeah. An awesome cleric quintet reference, man. Right? Very nicely done. Yeah, so I mean, like, just a little thing like that, but the in-game mechanical service to it is that, you know, in the same way that the whole universe is kind of dancing all the time to let you know that the game's not frozen, this lets you know that the game didn't break, you broke, you know? So, like, you have now screwed up to the point where there's no recovering, right? You now need to at least back up a move, you know, which I think is a very kind of a clever way to reinforce that. So you're not sitting there like, wait, what's going on, man? Like, all of a sudden, all of my controls died. Like, I don't get it. It's like, yeah, because there is no you. And so, yeah. And so in that same thing, there's always a very clear sound effect associated, like, when a thing happens, you know? So for example, when you put a rule into place, you know, there's a little like, bloop, you know,
yeah, a little kind of sparkly noise.
Yeah, kind of sound effect where it's like, hey, just so you know, like, all of the letters will turn a bright color and it'll give you a little sound effect to be like, hey, just so you know, you put a new rule into effect. So if you weren't trying to do that, you did it. So you may want to double check what you just did because you've changed the nature of the universe. The same thing with, like, you know, if you destroy something, if you make something, if you anytime you do a thing, even moving technically does have a small little running around carpet trying to zap your younger brother.
It's really inoffensive though. It's like,
to me, it sounds exactly like the sound effect of, you know, trying to build up static electricity to, like, shock your sibling. Like, that's, I don't know exactly what that sounds like. I didn't have any siblings. I had to, like, live vicariously through others. But my understanding is that was a thing that siblings did to one another.
Does that mean you grew up deaf? Or I never heard any sounds because I had no siblings.
Yes. No, I just... I think that I saw on a TV show, which just sounds so sad. Like, I saw on a TV show the way siblings interacted with one another. But no, I saw that. And I think, like, my brain said, ooh, you could do that to your parents. And then immediately said... don't do that to your parents. So I just don't think that I ever made that sound because I never was trying to do the thing that the sound would precipitate.
That's fair. If you live in a dry enough climate like I do, you're just constantly electrocuting yourself and everyone around you. It's just part of winter.
Dude, I'll tell you what, one of the things that I found when I lived in Colorado was is that, you know, because the worst is when you reach out to grab a doorknob because it's always on your fingertips. Mm-hmm. And that hurts a lot. So I realized I developed this habit when I was like 13 and just never got rid of it, which is that typically is I will tap a door with my knuckle before I'll open it. You know, it's just like a quick tap and then open. You know, so it's seamless. Like, I don't think that most people even know me would know that I generally do that. But yeah, I generally don't touch with my fingertips a doorknob just because of that.
So I can give you the adult version of that. Not that kind of adult, but the adult version, which Ooh. Is all
so that kind of adult.
All winter long, every time I go to kiss my wife, the first thing she does is slap me on the side of the face to discharge the static. So she nice. will literally reach up and just quickly poke me in the side of the face to discharge the static before I give her a kiss.
It sounds like, you know, like grounding the robot before you, like, do work on it, you know?
Basically, yeah.
Fantastic. Do you have anything else for audio?
I do want to give my thumbs up, actually, to the music, because I agree with you that it's ignorable and that is probably what they want. But if you stop and listen to it, like I actually sought out the soundtrack for this, which is, like all modern indie games, easily available. But if you stop and listen to this music, I don't think it's just quiet music. It feels like they intentionally wrote fairly meditative Zen. The melodies are not, there aren't dizzying highs and frightening lows, right? It's just, it's very soothing. Like it frankly sounds like the kind of music you might meditate to, right? It's not exciting. It's not scary. It's not sad. It's sort of emotionless white noise almost, but with like a really simple melody. And there's, I don't know, maybe like 5 or 6 different level songs that I can think of that I was exposed to, plus like the title screen music. But I liked it. I actually kind of caught myself thinking like, I sort of want to like just go for a walk and listen to this. Like I want to just like be in the woods and just looking at rocks and thinking about pushing those rocks. Like it's just, it's nice kind of zened out. And I think that's like the super simple visuals. That's also important for a puzzle game because some of the puzzle games we've played have fairly energetic music, which makes you feel like you should always be on the move. And sometimes that's true, right? Like in Tetris, you can't sit there and have a long, deep think about where the next block should go. You sort of need to decide, right? Dr. Yeah. Mario, right? You sort of need to make your decision. In a soccer ball.
Lois, can you look up fork and look up lung? Why? Time is a factor here, Lois. It's like where should I put this blue block? Time is a factor here.
Yeah, exactly, right? So having energetic music might actually fit better because it's like, yeah, stay focused, stay on task. Whereas in a Sakoban, like, which this is for all of its quirks, is you actually kind of want the opposite. You sort of want to sit back, take in the rules of the universe, think about which gravity constants you're going to change, and then go take a decisive action, right? You're not really incentivized to just randomly string nouns and verbs together to see what happens, right? It's like, no, take all the time you want. There'll be this gentle music that's not driving you forward. The visuals aren't going to be all like crazy and like oh, I can't interpret this because it's so visually complicated, right? It's just all just like take your time, man. Like the puzzle will be here when you're ready. And I feel like the music actively supports that.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I mean, you know, obviously it's a running gag about how poor my ear is for music. But that being said, is that I would agree completely in the sense that, you know, it the pacing of the music is not antithetical to the game. And it's actually a very good lead into mechanics because I definitely think that the game allows you to sit there and kind of, I mean, realistically, the cadence to this game that I generally fell into was staring at the screen motionless for between 1 to 10 minutes and then exploding into motion, you know, and working through this plan. And then, like, I mean, 3/4 of the time, half the time, the plan would fail, you know, because of like, oh, well, okay. But it was never because the game did something that I could not have predicted. I just simply did not predict it, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, you know, I would be like, okay, I'm going to put this sentence together. It's like, oh, but when I do wall is, you know, or rock is push, you know, like now I can't push it the rock to where I want it to go. Like I thought I could, but I couldn't. Or now that, you know, rock is push the way I went about it, rock is no longer, you know, telly. So, or actually now that rock is push, I can't use it as a teleporter because I can't get into it.
Yeah. Which is, this isn't a problem for the first section of the game, but you learn at some point when more complication comes in that the rules have an order, right? So like push trumps telly, right? Stop trumps, I think push also trumps stop actually, right? Stop trumps defeat. So if wall is stop and defeat, the wall can't kill you because you have to step onto the wall for it to kill you, but stop stops you next to it. So
yes,
there is an order of priority to the rules, and I think they mostly make it so you never ever have to think about that through level design, right? They try to not put you in an area where you have to understand, oh, this rule trumps that one, but if I put this one in between those two, then I can get this crazy effect where all three are true, but only because this particular one is in the middle. That may be happening under the hood, but you as the player do not have to do any of that juggling, and thank God. Like, yes. That would be nightmarish.
Well, and again, not what they're trying to do. They're not trying to make you think about like precedence and order of operations. They're just trying to get you to think about changing the universe. And to me, it kind of made intuitive sense because it was like, whichever ones happen, like, don't allow you to occupy the same space as the thing. So like Telly and Defeat necessitate you occupying the same space as the thing, you know? Also, another just, I mean, bizarre thing that you just don't even think of is that if there's no rules associated with an object, you just pass through it unfettered, which is just eerie.
Yeah.
You know, so like if rock isn't push or stop or defeat, it's just nothing. You just move through it. Like it just kind of isn't a part of the universe until all of a sudden you make it a part of the universe. So like there were definitely times where I was like, oh yeah, I don't need rock is push. But your brain gets so used to the fact that just because, I mean, generally, a lot of the times they necessitate you to use the rule rock is push, right? You use that one a lot, which makes sense because they play with it very cleverly because, you know, generally speaking, a lot of the puzzles will necessitate you to push a rock. But then occasionally they'll be like, okay, but we're going to make it so that way you can't use rock is push. Because remember, that's not inherent, you know, like it's, all of the rules are negotiable. So like they'll give you like three or four where it's like rock is push, and then they'll play on that. They also do an amazing thing with the level design where literally sometimes they will take the exact same level and they'll just make it like it's the level and then the level plus, mm-hmm. where they just twist a single thing about it and it completely changes the way you have to solve the puzzle. It is mind-blowing. Like the way that works, like literally one of them that I remember was, it was the first one where you can like teleport, I think through love, like love is Telly. And it was the exact same level. They just mirror imaged it. Right. So I'm like, okay, cool. So I just do exactly what I did before, just as a mirror image. And then all of a sudden I was like, wait, no, that's not going to work because of the way I did it before. A mirror image of that won't actually work. I've got to completely from the ground up change the way I solve this puzzle. And that's, you know, like, again, I think that they're doing that on purpose to be like, you know, remember, just because it worked this way doesn't mean that a small change doesn't mean you have to completely reformulate your thought process. It's really impressive.
And okay, so I got to ask you, I knew at some point I was going to have to ask you this question, but I'm going to ask you this question now. Do you know about how many puzzles you solved as of the time of recording? Because I suspect we will both dip back into this in the future.
Yeah. Do you know how many it takes to beat the game?
It's less than 50. I think it's maybe 35 to 45.
Yeah. So I'd say probably 60, 55, somewhere in there.
Okay. So do you know how many there are total?
Oh, like at least 100.
249.
There it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, a tremendous number because I remember, and so this is another thing that I had in my notes, which was just how early the ending is, you know, because basically you solve like 30 puzzles and I, you know, you get the three little flower things, you know, I'm like, all right, neat. And so, so then, you know, a level appears and goes, the end? Question mark. And I'm like, no. And I went in there, and it's hard. It's a hard level, you know? But I was able to beat it, and then, yeah, the game just ends. And I was like, well, but there's still tons of levels, you know? So then I kind of went back through and played a few more, and I was like, oh, right. Because the game gets absurdly difficult right around that time. Like, I beat the game and then was able to scratch the surface of, like, each of the additional little areas I could get to, and then just hit hard walls in almost every single one. And I was like, I mean, I could go online very easily and find the solution to this, but that's not fun.
Well,
that's not
a puzzle game, right? Because yeah. Like, if you look up the solution in a platformer, like where do I go? You still then have to go, right?
Right.
Like I recently got the true ending or the full ending to Hollow Knight. And it's like, mm-hmm. yeah, I knew what I needed to do, but it was hard. And no amount of walkthroughs, even though I had like the most rigged setup and I knew that this is the easiest way to beat the final boss, it was still hard and I had to execute it. Puzzle games, particularly Soccer Bomb likes, are not like this, right? If you look, mm-hmm. you can literally, okay, up one, right three, down two, you know what I mean? Like it would be, yeah. it'd be gaming by numbers. Like it just wouldn't. I can't imagine that being satisfying. Maybe some people would be like, hints are nice, right? If like mm-hmm. you don't even know where to start and it's like, do this rule first or undo this rule first. It's like, oh, okay, that's step one. Now I can try to extrapolate knowing that that is the correct step one, right? But,
right.
but just seeing the entire solution is not a useful thing.
So I wanted to share, this is tangential, but I wanted to share this one side story about a time when I totally did look up the solution to a puzzle online, but it was because I was playing a different game. So I had one of the employees that worked under me in a job I had a few years back, you know, came to me and we would do like these like, you know, management walks around the lab. And so in front of a whole host of managers handed me one of those brain teaser puzzles, right? And said,
oh, like the kind you get at a Cracker Barrel.
Yeah, exactly. He said, like, hey, here you go. And he said, like, you haven't solved it until you've both taken it apart and put it back together, right? Now, I am terrible at these, you know? And so I was like, okay. So I went back to, you know, and one of the things that this team had difficulty with was, like, kind of not working together as a team, you know? And so I went back to my office and, you know, I tried it a little bit just to see, and of course I couldn't do it. So I went online, looked up the solution, internalized the solution, went back to him, solved it in front of him, and handed it off to him. And he said, wow, that was a great job. You know, you solved that pretty quickly. I'll have to give you a more difficult one in the future. I was like, would you like to know how I solved it? And he said, how? And I said, I went online, I looked up the solution, and I solved it. And he just, the betrayal in his face was so stark. And he just said, you're a monster. And I said, just before you think too poorly of me, what was the exact thing you asked me to do? He said, I asked you to solve the puzzle. And I said, and I used every resource I could possibly marshal to that end to help you succeed in your goal of me solving this puzzle. I wasn't prideful. I just went online and found the solution because it was a resource I had. And he's like, I didn't tell you not to look online. I'm like, no, you did not. And he was like, I'll make sure to do that next time. I'm like, yeah, if it's important to you, then make sure that you are careful about what resources I'm allowed to bring to bear to achieve your goal.
Yeah. So. And I think the moral of that story is that floating just outside the visual space of Baba is You is cheating is not fun.
Yes, exactly.
Right? Like, because we can all choose to live in a universe where that rule is not in effect, but
right.
but we choose to stay in the universe where cheating is not fun. Because I did, I'll be honest, three times of the 50 some odd puzzles that I solved, three times I did look up hints, but I never mm-hmm. looked up a full solution because I was like, I'm not there yet. Like if I was going to try and actually do all 249 puzzles, maybe I would get to a point where I was like, no amount of hints will get me through this cluster. But but I didn't get to that point where a hint wasn't enough to allow me to extrapolate the rest. Based on the fact that I only got to about, you know, like 57 or 58 out of 249, I'm not positive I would have stayed within the hint realm being enough. But, you know, I can live in a universe where I believe that that's true.
Yes. Well, and also, too, I think that, you know, for me, I could imagine looking up the entire solution to a puzzle if I thought, like, this puzzle is an artificial spike in the difficulty curve. So I'm just trying to, like, because the way the game is laid out is that, which I also think is fascinating, is that you beat a level and then you can attempt nearby levels. So sometimes that means it unlocks three levels you can try. Sometimes it unlocks one. But it does unlock levels, you know. So if I said, man, this one level is going to unlock three different levels for me, I just can't get it done no matter how many hints. It's like line homestarrunner.com something.com, you know, like if it's gonna be that that bad. You know, like I may just like look it up, but that would be with the idea that the next puzzles are hopefully going to drop in the difficulty curve and I can then just solve them on my own or solve them with a hint. So I could see maybe leveraging that, but I didn't even attempt it because the skill wall is so, it's made out of like titanium, man. You know, 'cause I wouldn't run in full tilt and I was like, oh man, you know, like I stumbled a couple of times, but I'm just stronger. Because the thing this game does so well is that when you solve it, you feel so smart. Like, oh my God, it's like heroin, you know? I mean, the highs are so dizzying.
Yeah. Well, no, like you realize how dangerous dopamine is, and you're like, my body produces a chemical that I can get this addicted to? How is this good design?
Yeah. Yeah, no, because I mean, there would literally be ones where, you know, I'd go, I've got it. And I would like go pull Megan in from another room and sit her down and make her watch me solve. Like, look at how brilliant I am. Like, you know, like you married this, you know, like you get to have this every day, you know, like just and then on the other hand, the failures. Oh, man. Like, after you've been hooked on that dopamine, man, I'm like, oh, man, come on. Just you got any more of that sweet, sweet puzzle solving for me, man? Come on, man. Don't hold out on me. And it'd be like, no, all you have to do is just figure out how to use move, with, push, and not. And it's like, I know I can do this, man. No, no, don't change it for me, man. Just give me one more. Just a little bit more, man. You know, it's just, it was rough, man.
So one of the things I cherish about nostalgia games is that we have access to things that are not research because they're part of the culture. So a listener got wind that we were going to be playing this game and sent me an interview with the creator, which is why I think it was either one guy or a super small team. But I was trying to like not deeply internalize every single thing in this interview, but it's an interview about him as a game developer, less like, here's how you solve, you know, puzzle number 85, right? Because that'd be a crappy interview. But two of the things that he said that really stood out to me is, one, when he decided to make a puzzle game, because he's made other video games before, when he decided to make a puzzle game, he was like, I want to make a really difficult puzzle game. And about halfway through development, I realized that when you are designing the puzzles, you have no sense of how difficult they actually are. Because you're like way too close to the problem. So he put a massive emphasis on not just having playtesters, but he specifically recruited playtesters who were puzzle game designers. So like Jonathan Blow, who did, you know, show favorite Braid and The Witness, right? Who's like a famous puzzle game designer. Like he was one of this guy's playtesters, right? That's nice. Like, that is the fear he had that he was making a game that was functionally impossible for anyone except him, right? So he was very careful about that. The other thing that I thought was really charming is he wanted those eureka moments to not just make you feel smart, but if possible, to like give you a laugh. Because you are changing the gravity constant of the universe. Sometimes rock is you. Sometimes wall is you. And then there's a lot of walls on the screen. And suddenly the whole level looks like it's freaking out. And he really wanted those moments of euphoria to be delightful as much as he wanted them to make you feel smart. And yeah. I before I read this article, I actually had that experience a few times where I was just like, oh, that's funny. Okay, I see what he wants me to do. Okay, I get it. Right? Like,
yep.
And it, you feel smart, but the overriding feeling in some of those instances is more like mirth. You're just like, that's clever.
Yeah. No, it very much so is very close. I think it is the closest that I have ever been to doing drugs without doing drugs, you know? Like, where it is just kind of like a, oh, wow, there is a way to... Because I mean, most drugs, it's not the drug that's doing it to you. It's the drug that's forcing your brain to then do stuff to you. You know, like you said, like you're, it's not, you know, the cocaine, it's not the fall that kills you. It's the sudden stop at the end. It's not the cocaine that gets you high. It's the fact that it just jams into your dopamine thing and says, you know, like free all the things. And then it just all dumps out into your body. Right. You know, so it's like, oh, so I don't need another chemical to do that. I can just do that to me given the right circumstances. And they found them. And so I'm kind of glad that that, you know, like I said, I hit the skill wall that I did, because otherwise I'd just be, you know, like with 15-inch fingernails and toenails just playing Baba Is You in a basement somewhere.
So now here's the counter story to the joy that this can bring. The first level I played in, because we didn't mention when we were talking about visuals somehow, but the levels are kind of like mildly themed. So there's like an underwater area where there's like columns, like Atlantean columns, and like jellyfish and seaweed. And then there's like a farmy kind of like country area. And then there's like a space area, right? So there's, they all function in basically the same way, but they use the coat of paint, light as it is, to sometimes get your mind thinking in a certain way, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, some of the space themed levels, even though they're still top down, the layout of the level is as if there is verticality, because that is when they introduce is fall, where things fall to the bottom of the screen, which wouldn't make sense in all of the screen layouts because you're looking top down, and down is not down, right? Down is the lower part of the screen. It's south, not down, right? So like there's this interesting way they use the visuals to communicate, or the theming and the visuals to communicate, like, here's how you should maybe think about the world in a way that will help get you there. And in some of those theme areas is where they also choose to introduce certain concepts in a way that it will seem to fit. And in the space area, I believe, is where they introduce the word empty, where you can be empty. So like empty is you, where you are now all of the negative space of the level. And
yes, which I never really was able to get my head fully wrapped around.
I couldn't do it, dude. I couldn't.
Yeah.
That was my dotted I and Jeremy Baramee. Like I just, it completely.
Tuesdays and also July.
Also never.
And sometimes it's never. It's true.
It just, it completely freaking broke me. Like I beat a few of the puzzles that had empty in them, but those, I had like more gritted teeth, sweat on the forehead with those levels than any other puzzles. Even puzzles that I had a harder time solving, just thinking I need to manipulate everything that isn't.
manipulate not.
Yes. It was just a really, really hard thing for me to get my head around.
Did you find that like eventually it would get to the point where you would see the word empty, even if it wasn't an in effect rule, and you're like, oh God, I've got to dick around with that again.
Yes.
Like there were definitely some concepts that when I would see them, I'd be like, oh no, I suck at these. Like, you know, for me, it was move, you know, like I knew
you have to like time it so that they move and do something for you.
Yes. And so I knew how that worked as a rule. I was so garbage at employing it well, because I'd be like, where do I need to line you up? And like, how do I need to time it? Like, it was just completely antithetical to my thought process. So one of the things, though, actually on the sky levels that you're talking about, the outer space levels, that I noticed that kind of was like an aha moment, is a lot of the times the level names can give hints on how to solve them.
That is true, but I'm pretty sure the designer thought of that, because some of them are actually counterpoints, and there's no indication that it's a counterpoint. So it's like he's doubly trying to screw with you. Like, is this a hint or is it a not hint?
But I do remember with that one, because the first one where fall is introduced, you know, blank is fall. The name of the level is float, you know? And so so you have to basically get the key across the level by moving the text underneath it.
Yeah.
You know?
And there's a couple puzzles where the words aren't just rules. They are physical objects that you're like, oh, I need to get this word over there where I can't go, but I can stack seven words behind it and shove it over there, which is, that is one of the few mechanics that, there were two specific mechanics that, at least in my play that I encountered, that I don't know how I feel about them. One is the words are objects in the world, and sometimes you use them as things like platforms. Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, it's once you think about them that way, that's okay. But it feels like there's this constant meta rule going on, like words are platforms, and you just have to, right?
But all of the rules are negotiable.
Yeah, but
even the meta rules.
Yeah, and that like just felt a little weird because it's like, well, there are times where words can cross over other words, but it's not really supposed to happen. And so that felt a little awkward because it's like, this is true except when it's not, but I don't really have full control over when this rule's in effect or not. It's just, it's mostly true. The other one mm-hmm. is actually kind of the same problem, which is there are times like with teleport, but also just with like is stop, where mm-hmm. you can put an object on top of another object and then make it impossible to move that object. And because you later get the rule has, when an mm-hmm. object is destroyed, it releases another object. And if you make that object contain itself and something else, you can create an infinite loop. And that's fine, but there are actually a couple puzzles where one of the solutions, because some of them have like two or three solutions, but there are a couple puzzles where it is a perfectly serviceable solution to create an infinite loop, which is not a way that I think they should be encouraging you to think, because it's, again, it's like a meta rule. It's like, oh, mm-hmm. I can create circumstances by which the normal passage of time will cause this other thing to happen. And that's, it's not like a game ender, but I tended to not like the puzzles where the words had to act like platforms and where I had to cheat the physics of the world to create loops. Those just felt less satisfying to me. Maybe other people mm-hmm. totally that got their rock as push off, right? Like, I don't know. But for me, I was just like, like, okay, yeah, I get it. I had to move Kiki on top of this section column of words, but I was always just like, eh.
Yeah, no, for me, I think the using words as objects was not a problem. And I actually did get a kick out of ones where it was like, you know, key has key, you know, and then like you do box has key. And then,
oh,
you know, you
I love the has. I just didn't like when you could create an endlessly automatically spawning series of things with like has and move. And so mm-hmm. it's just like, oh, this is just happening now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair, I think that was some of the ones where I was like, you know, where I kind of would get a chortle out of it. Because I was like, look, you know, especially, and honestly, I got a bigger kick out of it when it was unnecessary. Because I was like, one key? You like keys, do you? Have all of the keys in the world, you know? And then like, just be a bajillion keys on the thing. And then I would just find the one that I needed and go move it to the door to open it and then get to flag as win or whatever, you know. So yeah, I think that the game is kind of in a perpetual state of, you know, kind of challenging any preconceived notion that you may have, you know, and that can very much so become exhausting. I think for me, kind of the way I look at it is it's kind of like a titration in the sense that everything titrates to an endpoint eventually, given enough titrant, you know? And I know this is like a super specific analogy, but I mean, it's just like, to me, it's like, it's not a question of if you'll eventually get outpaced by Baba Is You. The question is simply when, you know? So like, it's, you know, if somebody came to me and said, I beat Baba Is You, my first question would be, how long did it take you? And if they said, like, 5 hours or something like that, I would either assume, I would then immediately try to size them up as a human and be like, you are either lying or so much smarter than me that I can't even understand your type of intelligence. You
or,
know, like,
or for them, the cheating is not fun rule may not be in effect.
Maybe, but I would just be, I mean, like, literally, that would then be challenging my understanding of the universe. Be like, how? How did you do that? If they were like, I don't know, man, it just makes sense to me. Be like, what projects can we put that your very specific mind would just rip out of the water, you know, because I consider myself to be a pretty smart and fairly mentally pliable dude. Man, I petered out pretty fast. The one other thing that that we kind of touched on before, but I just want to make sure that we kind of touch on, and then this is like my other only last note that I had where I wanted to make sure we touch on it, which is that the controls for undoing and restarting the level are single button pushes, you know? So it's just
it's so good.
Yeah. No, I mean, just the fact that like when you screw something up and you're like, oh, I want to undo that last move, or I want to undo the last 50 moves, or I want to just restart the level. You just press a button, you internalize what those buttons are.
This is exactly what I said I wanted when we played Quirk. I've been playing a Sakoban-like on my mobile device, which for some reason does not have an undo at all. And that is exactly what I would want there, is a single button to undo. All Sakoban-likes should have single button to undo. It is everything.
Which Sakoban-like are you playing?
I think it's called the Warlock's Tower or something. It's like this cute little pixel arty. It's the mechanic in this universe is you have to touch these numbered bubbles, and that's how many steps you can take until you die. So like if you have three steps, you have three steps to touch another numbered bubble, otherwise you die and you have to start the puzzle over. But that's the thing, is you cannot undo. And so if the puzzle is 50 movements, right, which is on the long side, let's say 30. If it's 30 movements, you have to memorize all 30 of those movements, because most of the puzzles have one and only one proper solution. So like in Baba Is You, because of the way you have to think about it, if you had to restart the puzzle anytime you're like, oh, I accidentally pushed this thing against the wall and now it's stuck there because I can't get on the other side of it, or I, you know, killed myself, right, I undid the Baba Is You or something, and you had to restart the entire puzzle, like, this game, you know what that would do? It would push it from hard to punishing. It would be like, oh no, if you can't hold all this in your head, you're just not smart enough for this game. It's like, that's not fun. No one thinks that's fun.
Yeah, being a jerk. The one actually Sakoban-like I've been dabbling with that you actually recommended to me is a Sakobond.
That's awesome. Is it good?
It's good. It's good. I will definitely say that I don't know for I having no control group, I can't say this for sure. I will say that, so this is a chemistry Sakoban game for those who, you know, are listening at home. So it's basically you move a molecule around to slowly connect all of the bonds and make a proper molecule. Being a chemist definitely makes it easier because sometimes just looking at the atoms that they give me, I can take a shot at what chemical they're trying to make me make, you know? So I can be like, okay, so with these, it's probably acetic acid. So I know that I'm going to need to have carbon bonded to this, bonded to an oxygen, but, you know, so then I can kind of start in the right direction. So I could imagine like not having any chemistry knowledge, it would be a little bit more difficult to enter, but it's a good game. I suggest people check it out.
Yeah. We just had a sub review inside of our game discussion. So I will admit that what I'm about to discuss is completely unreliable self-reported data. But there is a website on the interwebs called howlongtobeat.com.
And nice.
I use this because when I'm playing games not for nostalgia goggles, I like to have an idea of what I'm getting into, because I have a job and a wife and kids and hobbies and things. So like, I need to know, like, is this a 5-hour game? Is this a 50-hour game? Not that I'll walk away from a 50-hour game. I just need to know.
Right.
So this is all self-reported data, right? So it's, you know, it might fudge low if people are trying to make themselves look smart. The average reported playtime for completionists of Baba Is You, because they have different categories, is 43 hours.
Really?
That's a long time, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, especially considering that, well, let's see. So 43 hours, right? 200 and how many levels?
249, I think.
So 249 divided by, or sorry, 40, and it was 45 hours, right?
43 and a half.
So about 0.18 hours per level, right? So about 10, 11 minutes per level.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's an average, right? Because some of the levels you solve in 5 seconds and other ones you stare at the screen for 40 minutes.
Yeah. And then walk away and pout and then come back.
Yeah. But I mean,
I wonder like if when they're self-reporting that data, if they're including all the time, like when they're making dinner and not like, and they're still thinking about the level, you know, and then they come back and they play it real fast. They're like, oh, that level only took me 3 minutes. It's like, it kind of took you 20 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's be honest. Right. Cause like a platformer, or an RPG or something doesn't work that way. You know, you don't walk away from Super Mario World and then say, aha, I've reached the level.
When a mathematician finds a new proof and they say, how long did it take you to come up with them with that? They don't count the time they were at the blackboard. They count the entire time they were working on the theorem.
Yeah. But it's still, I mean, even because I actually made a note that it took me right around 6 hours, just over 6 hours to get to the A Way Out puzzle where you get the like first ending. Mm-hmm. And I mean, so that's about a fifth of the way in terms of number of levels, but assuming I'm even smart enough to finish the game, that means I'm only about a tenth of the way through in play hours. Like,
right. Yeah. No, it's long. But did you have anything else?
I do need to at least talk about is pull. Because this is something we talked a lot about when we played Quirk, and it's just part of the nature of Sakuban games. And so I'm positive he included this to be a troll, because in Sakuban games, you can't push things, or you can't pull things, you can only push them. Which means if you push something up against a wall, it's now trapped there, right? Like, you can undo, but that also undoes anything else that changed in the world. So if you have like Kiki moving, or you have something, you know, something that's going down the conveyor belt because the belt is shift or whatever, it also undoes those things. So having is pull means time can continue to move forward and you can pull things, right? It also means that you can essentially attach something to your little rabbit butt and then pull it across the screen. But notably, you cannot turn left or right, because apparently that does not constitute pulling. You can only pull in a straight line. So if you want to pull something like left and then down, you have to pull it left, then walk around to the bottom of it, put your butt against it, and then walk down, right? So
yeah. How do you pull stuff?
With my butt. So
you gotta clench real hard.
I based on the levels I played, I only saw is pull less than half a dozen times, maybe three or four, right? Like, not a lot, but the first screen I was on, because every puzzle is a single screen, right? So that's another kind of important mechanical thing to note, is you always have 100% of the information in front of you at all times, right? Yes. Another visual choice they made so that clarity is never in question. But the first time I saw is pull on screen, I was just like, what? That's like a fundamental part of a Sakuban, like, which, as you've said a couple times, is he wanted to make every single thing questionable, right? Every rule of the universe is questionable, including you can only push things. And so it's hopefully in the later levels, he doesn't go crazy with it, because it just feels a little too winking at the camera to go overboard with it. Like, give me a few winks to the camera. Like, let me know, you know, you're in a TV show, but don't deliver monologues directly to me and say my name. Like, then now that's a different thing at that point, right? Now, if pulling becomes a fundamental way I interact with the universe, it's sort of not a Sakuban-like anymore, right? Because Sakuban-likes are pushing, right? If you played a roguelike where the levels weren't randomly generated and you kept all your stuff and you could save and continue your progress, is it really a roguelike anymore? Right? There's only so much stuff you can change before you're like, it's not a something like, it's an inspired by.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, that's a fair point. I think I maybe got to one or two is pulls, and I think I failed both of those puzzles, so it didn't quite hit his home to me, because I was just kind of like, all right, this is a mechanic that I clearly don't understand how to use it, but yes, that is a fair point.
Yeah. Yeah, so now we can ask, do we think it learned from history? And I will say just hard yes, no question. This is a phenomenal evolution of the Sakuban-like genre. Anyone who is looking to make a game in this genre is now, like, Baba likes are probably going to become their own, like, subgenre, right? So Baba is Sakuban is like some other game, because this whole idea of rules manipulation is not new. Like, there have been other games where it's like, oh, you can change things about the game world. Not like this. Not this elegant, not this fully fleshed out and polished and well thought out in all of the different aspects of, like, how might the music support the player solving the puzzle? How do the visuals support the player solving the puzzle? How does the screen layout support the player solving the puzzle? Like, every little thing is constantly reminding you, like, question everything, question everything, question everything. And then when there are things they don't want you to question, like we were talking about in the visuals, they make it so clear to free up those mental cycles to focus on the other thing. So, I mean, I would recommend this even to someone who doesn't necessarily like puzzle games, just for the pure novelty. Even if they only got through the first 10 puzzles, I would be like, just play it just for the pure novelty of what it is attempting to do. Even if you hit a skill wall super early on and then you're like, hard pass on the rest of this nonsense, just to say you saw it is, I think, worthwhile, which is not typically something I can say about a video game. Like, just pick it up for 10 minutes just so you could say you did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, and for me too, hard yes. Like, this game is... And again, like, you know, I'm very, very glad that we played it. To me, it's very philosophically important, you know, because, again, you know, change yourself or change the universe, you know. And so often games are about, you know, like, your own personal skill mastery and, you know, like, how much can you jump or turn or contort or shoot or what have you. But to just say, like, yeah, or what if you just changed all the bad guys to flowers, you know, or made it so that way when the bad guys, like, imagine if in Mario you could just say, like, yeah, but. It's like, oh, man, you know, Bowser keeps hitting me because, I keep losing to Bowser because every time he runs into me, like, I shrink. And it's like, well, what if you just changed it that way when he ran into you, he shrinks, you know, like, he takes damage. You know, like, you don't even think about that. You just so quickly, and one of the things we've said a number of times on this show is that, you know, one of the things that video games do so well is teach us how to learn the rules of new universes and think in novel spaces. But this is one of the few ones that I've seen to say, like, yeah, and that novel space is, you know, making the universe bend to you. So from my seat, Baba has learned. Baba is good.
The curtain falls. The music plays. The credits roll. Then it all fades to black. And you're left by yourself. The fanfare is gone. There's no player two. There by your side to share victories won. But as you slowly progress down the hall to your bed, a few great events leak back into your head. From the time that you spent traversing the land, battling evil, fighting the darkness, just sword in hand. Your memories creeping with the end of a smile. You realize again.